The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So perhaps we should start. And welcome back. People are still coming in. So as we did last time, if you have any questions or comments or reports about your meditation that you'd like to bring up as we start, maybe based on the instructions last week or last few weeks, you're welcome to start here more informally. Is it going well? Is it going bad? Is it going just going? Also, it's nice for me to hear a little bit about it, so I get some sense of how the how this teaching is working for you. Is it working for you? Is it working? The device?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's all completely clear. You sit down to meditate and you know exactly what to do. Easy sailing. Yes?
I have some questions about the emotional meditation from last week. Kind of revolving around how you experience the emotions during the meditation without getting lost in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's probably very related to what we're going to talk about today with thinking. I think most people who get lost in their emotions are actually getting lost in their thinking, in their stories, the stories connected to it, the meaning they assign, the predictions they have, the concerns they have, because, you don't think so?
Not for me.
Not for you. So can you say a little bit what happens to you when you meditate then, and you get lost?
I think physically when I get into a space where I'm sad, It just overwhelms me.
And
I'm not even thinking about what I'm sad about, because sometimes it's not anything in particular.
Oh, that can happen. Yeah, definitely. And when that happens, how are you relating to the sadness? What's your attitude you have towards it when it comes up?
I guess I'm not sure.
Because the attitude might be a little key to understand why you get pulled into it so far, that you feel like you're lost in it or caught up in it. And can I ask more? Because I need to understand you to be able to respond well. This is kind of a personal thing, but is that okay or is it enough?
That's enough for now.
That's enough, yeah. there are definitely feelings that can arise that don't have any discernible reason and stories connected to them. And often it's a sign of something very deep inside of us that needs its time. And the usual thing we do in this meditation practice is to hold it with care and kindness and compassion, as if it has permission to be there. We actually give it permission to be there. And our job with things like that is to help the feeling feel safe. But if you keep falling into it, there might be some attitude towards it. And I'm not going to speak for you, but some people will give up. It's so strong, and they kind of give up and sink into it. Some people are in a certain kind of way kind of fascinated with the strong emotions. Sometimes it can be a fascination of being really horrified or something, or really afraid, but it's still a fascination that really pulls them in. Some people feel like they're helpless, and that feeling of helplessness kind of, they also contribute to kind of giving up, and so takes over. And sometimes it's a sign that this, when it's really, really strong, that you finally have gotten out of the way. And a lot of people will interfere, will fix and analyze and do all this stuff with their emotions. And some of emotions just need to kind of have a chance. They need to have the time And so sometimes you've successfully gotten out of the way, and it can be overwhelming. And the idea is to kind of stay in your seat. I remember many years ago, there was a meditation teacher who said, the sign of a successful meditation, sometimes, he said, a sign of a successful meditation is you didn't leave your seat. That's it. You know, nothing more ambitious than that. Because sometimes it can be so tumultuous, you know, our lives, our difficulties, the emotions, the things happening, that the restlessness and the desire to get away is so strong that to be able to stay. He talked about it, sometimes it's like the rodeo, you know, because it's not always easy, this stuff, what's going on. It's not, we have association of meditation, you're supposed to be kind of calm and serene and just kind of infinitely kind of just pristinely aware of what's happening. But it doesn't always happen that way. And there's something very useful sometimes of getting out of the way. And if it, and trust it enough to let the waves come. And then the things, they tend to come in waves. I had a friend who had a lot of grief. She had, I think, four close people in her family or close to her people died in the course of 6 months or something. Her father, her brother, and I don't know, best friend, and so a lot of death. And she said she had a lot of experience with grieving at that time. And she said the grief came in waves, but when she went on a meditation retreat, the difference was that sometimes the grief was more intense while she was meditating, but the waves lasted only a couple of minutes. Whereas at home, the waves would last an hour or two at a time. So I think how she understood it was on retreat, she was just getting out completely out of the way of it, so it came through her in a kind of cleaner way. It was much more intense, but it kind of flowed through, and she wasn't feeding it, she wasn't reacting to it, holding it down. It just came through. So, I don't know what you're experiencing, but maybe some of these ideas I've said have some relevance, and see if they're. If not, you can leave them here. Yes.
I understand your answer. You know, when you're grieving, when you're sad. Thank you. Would you say the same thing about feeling good, feeling happy, joy? Just letting them go and not keep the enjoyment of feeling good?
For the purposes of the meditation, yes. Now, some people have so little joy and sense of well-being that it's really good to keep it there to be nourished and kind of begin to kind of feel cellularly some kind of refreshment, some kind of healing going on. So sometimes it's a good thing to keep. But in the pure version of the meditation, and you should always be suspicious of purity like this, but the pure version of it, yes, you you would not hold on to anything. You'd get out of the way and just let it move through you. And the paradox with some of these good meditations is that if you get out of the way and let them go through, you don't hold on to them, it tends to open up to better things. So if you hold on to the joy that might be there, the happiness out that might be there, you might actually be limiting yourself from something that's even nicer. So, and also in this meditation, what we're trying to learn is not so much to have good states or avoid bad states, difficult states, but we're really learning how to be free with them, to be kind of not to cling, not to react, not to have preferences, and just kind of let it to kind of find some degree of freedom or independence or peace with what's happening without needing to change it. So one of the sayings we have is that because freedom is such an important baseline purpose of this meditation practice, the saying is that if you're free only when things are going how you want them to go, you're not really free. If you're only things are only free when they're pleasant, you're not really free. So even when they're unpleasant, there's a certain kind of inner spiritual freedom that's possible. So if there are things that are nice and pleasant, like you're happy in meditation, the original purpose of the meditation is to not to be happy, but to learn to be free. And that's portable. You can carry over in all kinds of situations. If you depend on being happy, then you can't bring that into situations where you're unhappy. And so to be free, and so a training of freedom would mean to also train with happiness. Be free of your happiness too. Outside of meditation, stay with it. But in meditation, meditation has a different purpose. Does that make some sense?
I hear you. I hear the words.
Yes.
I'm not sure I know how to get there. I'm not sure I understand what that freedom is.
Yeah.
You know. I heard you.
Good. That's all I need to tell you. But some of this is a little bit, you know, more advanced teachings. So you can just wait, you know, just keep, this is a basic class, so just do the practice, and over time it'll unfold. At some point you'll understand, oh, that's why this is good.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so so we're going to do a little exercise that doesn't require changing your posture. And that is to just simply close your eyes as you are. And as you're here right now, check in with yourself and just notice how you are. The feelings, the body sensations, the attitudes, your thinking, your thoughts, whatever's going on. Just notice what's happening. We're not looking for anything right or wrong experience, a way of being. Just how it is for you right now, in any way that it appears. And as you're with yourself this way, see if you can notice, you know, what it's like just to be attentive this simple way. And now, add to this simple noticing, add some curiosity. Add some, like, interest. What is really going on here? Like, be curious about this experience of yours. And in that curiosity, maybe you look at it a little bit differently, or you let your attention roam around, or get closer, or just kind of bring a sense of curiosity to what's happening for you. And then can you notice if there's anything that's changed for you between these two different ways of noticing? Just the simple noticing I suggested at the beginning, and now adding curiosity to the situation. How does your experience change with the curiosity? Okay, so you can open your eyes. So did any of you notice a difference between two modes of noticing your experience? The first one, which was pretty simple, maybe just notice it how it is, and nothing more was asked. And the second one, to bring curiosity or interest to the experience. Did anything shift? Was it different in any way for any of you? Yeah, if you can wait for the mic, please.
I think there was some tenderness, kindness.
Kindness with?
With curiosity.
Kindness with curiosity.
It's more like almost childish, but not, I mean, in a good way. Like looking through the eyes of
Some childish,
child.
So maybe some joy, maybe?
Yeah,
some kindness.
Joy.
Very nice, okay.
Well, I didn't see any difference because I don't think I understood the curiosity part.
Oh, you have that already?
I think from the beginning I was asking myself,
why I was feeling
great.
Like this.
Great.
So I don't know if it's that's possible
nice.
To...
Okay. Yeah, that's great that you have that. Okay. Here.
I felt more expanded in the curiosity part, maybe in the beginning a little bit inward focused, and then just a general overall expansion, physical, mental.
Great, thank you. So it made a shift. Anything else? Yeah?
I guess mine was like, when I first started, I noticed like I was just having random thoughts go across my mind. But when I try to look with curiosity, it's like my wall went right back up, like it didn't really want me to
look,
dig any deeper a little bit.
Great. Well, that's interesting to see that we're operating. So there's all these different reactions we can have. And in Buddhism, sometimes we encourage curiosity in practice as an ingredient that helps us be present. And sometimes we just don't be curious because it's leaning too much into it. And you just want to kind of stay more kind of balanced and open. And the way you know what to do is whichever way is helpful. And sometimes curiosity can be more helpful, and sometimes curiosity is too much and you just want to be simpler. And then maybe so the walls don't come up or something. So, but for some of you who, like you talked about being expansive or kind or something, did you feel like with the curiosity that you were a little bit more, had more agency, power even, rather than just being the victim of the experience? Anyone want to say something about, in your own words, what I just tried to say?
I mean, really just that. It and I don't know that it always works this way, but when I got curious, I was able to quit feeling the awful feelings that I was having before.
Uh-huh.
Just a little bit, just it put me in a different spot. And so instead of just being stuck in it, I was like, let's just think about it. What is... So it made it, kind of took me out of the bad experience.
Great. And so you use your power of agency to kind of, in a very simple way, to be pulled out. And then could you look upon it in a different way then?
Yeah, instead of just feeling the misery, then I was starting to analyze, like, oh, and I kind of had an insight into maybe what it was.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And so it's like, oh, maybe it's not so bad because it's just due to some, it's not some innate thing. It's just a current circumstance.
Uh-huh. Great. Like okay. Thank you.
I guess you can tell what kind of mood I'm in. I felt the exact opposite as I felt it totally helpless because I started imagining all these, when I started thinking about things, I got curious about worst-case circumstances. So that gave me a whole lot of anxiety.
For your curiosity is involved thinking about all kinds of scenarios. Is that right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, and maybe I don't really understand what you mean by curiosity. Then.
Great. Oh, good. So I had another idea. I wanted to do one more thing that maybe speaks to this. So let's do it again. It's a bit brief, so just as you are, close your eyes. And this time, we'll just settle in a little bit. So maybe take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, relax and settle into your body. Breathe in deeply, and as you exhale and relax, settle into your chair or your cushion. And let your breathing return to normal. And then, as we did last week for those of you here, do the three-breath journey. Just follow three breaths. Feeling, experiencing the breathing as fully as you can. And now, maybe letting go of your breathing, take a few moments to notice how you are now. And be curious how you are now. But with the curiosity, have it be a silent curiosity. In other words, a curiosity that is not thinking about the experience or naming it or analyzing it, but just brings like a heightened silent awareness with the question, what is this? And just like in the silence of your inner perceptions, what do you know in the silent awareness that's curious? What is this? And whatever is happening, new thing that occurs, see if there can be a silent curiosity about it. That's not looking for answers. It's just there to, like you were listening to music and you listened with a quieter mind. You're interested, curious about the music, but you weren't thinking about it. You let go of your thoughts so that you can better hear the music. Let go of your thoughts and see if you can, with a silent curiosity, feel, sense what's happening to you. And then take a deep breath or two and can open your eyes when you're ready. So one of the things I'm trying to convey here is that we have capacities for awareness, for attention. We actually have many different ways of being aware. And so what we're doing in mindfulness meditation is beginning to get a sense of the different ways we can be aware and choose the one that seems appropriate at any given time. And to have some sense of, in doing so, having a little bit of agency, a little bit of independence or freedom from what you're paying attention to, because you're choosing how you pay attention to it. Many times when we're aware, often enough in daily life, we're aware of things and we just get glued to the experience, to the thoughts, to the feelings, that we don't really know any difference. But with mindfulness, it's kind of like we're ungluing and letting awareness kind of be a little bit freer to kind of really see what's happening, but we're not so glued to it. So I'm curious, was it interesting for any of you to try silent curiosity? Is that something you could understand? And if so, what happened for you in being curious that way?
So I'll just ask a question.
So for me, in that second time, I think I was maybe more relaxed with the breathing and the flow, like the journey of the breathing. Yeah. And so I didn't really have any emotion. Yeah. So oh. then, like, are we then just being curious about our physical state?
Yeah, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be emotions. It could be physical sensations, it could be sounds, thoughts, whatever's happening.
Okay. Yeah, I can't compare because my, like, what I was observing was so different between the two.
From the two meditations. Okay. I wasn't really trying to get you to feel your emotions particularly. Whatever came up. So it was the two different forms of curiosity you experienced. One where I just told you to be curious, and the second time being curious silently. Was that a different experience? Could you do that? Or was that kind of a foreign idea? You have no reference point for it.
Yeah, the second time, the curiosity, it was quiet. I kind of just sunk more into the meditation.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of just like more being present and aware. It was that kind of a curiosity rather than a intellectual probing one.
Great.
I had a hard time with curiosity and not being being quiet. I don't know what that meant, really. Because curiosity starts my mind thinking about this and that and that. Uh-huh. And so then what does it mean to be quiet?
That's why I was trying to use the analogy of music. I've had the experience having really faint sounds in the distance. And I have to let my mind get really quiet to try to listen to it. And I'm curious, but I can't think about it because it's so faint. I just have to get really quiet. So that's a little bit like that. I don't know if that analogy makes any sense.
I kind of ended up with feeling like I was floating in space.
Uh-huh.
And that seemed to help because it seems like it's quiet out there.
Great.
Or something.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. So partly I wanted to do this because of the topic of today, which is thinking. It's very easy to get pulled into the world of thoughts. Some people are really identified with their thoughts. Almost as if their thinking is, I think, therefore I am, is the famous philosophical statement. And so the idea, some people, it's indistinguishable to them between who they are as a person, their identity, their feelings, and who they are in the essence or something, and their thinking phenomena. And thinking is just like one of the many faculties we have. It doesn't have to be the heart of who we are, define who we essentially are. And in Buddhism, we don't say, I think, therefore I am. We say, so if they say anything, they say, I am because I am. It just can be much simpler, the idea of just being alive, than needing to have to think. And we have other ways of perceiving, of processing things in our life that don't really depend on conscious thinking going on. And one of the great joys, I think, of meditation is to learn to quiet the thinking mind or not be caught in it or centered in it so much that so we start experiencing the richness or the more range of what it's like to be a human being and the different range of perceptions and intelligences that we have that are, you know, operating that can be limited by excessive focusing on thinking. They say that a huge percentage of the people who struggle in life with depression struggle with it because of rumination. It's the only in these days, it's the only time I ever hear the word rumination being used in English is in relationship to people who are depressed. But this idea, I guess rumination means you're just reviewing and repeating over and over again and chewing on the same kind of difficult thoughts, stories, ideas about myself. And it just kind of begins to wear people down. Often our thinking can come along with a mood. So if there's a lot of like self-critical thoughts that we're ruminating on, thinking about, then the mood of that criticism can really weigh a person down, discourage a person. And so to learn and how not to be so caught in repetitive thinking is one of the great powers of meditation practice, to be able to somehow stop that. And you can't necessarily stop your thinking, but sometimes you can stop the incessant kind of flow of the same rumination when it's counterproductive. And then be able to step back and see yourself in a different way, not through the filter of these thoughts that we're always having. So it can be very powerful to practice mindfulness of thinking. So a few introductory words further about it. Meditation often involves a quieting of the mind so that thinking doesn't have the upper hand. At the same time, many people associate meditation with not thinking. Many people have a kind of an adversarial relationship with their thinking when they meditate, partly because meditation is what takes us away from the present moment. And so they're just trying to stop that, you know, just cut it out. And it's so hard to meditate because I keep thinking about all kinds of other things. The idea in this meditation, a mindful meditation, is not to make anything the enemy. In fact, we say in this meditation that there are no distractions. So it might seem like your thinking is a distraction, but that's a kind of evaluation. It's a kind of a judgment about them. And the alternative to seeing them as a distraction is to see them as just one more thing to be mindful of. And so the idea is panoramically, kind of 360 degrees almost, whatever our experience is that's happening, that's predominant, that becomes the meditation. That becomes the place where we bring this kind of meditative awareness to be present for it without being lost in it, but also without kind of being kind of vague about what's happening also. Just really see it and begin to find some freedom in that seeing. And it's possible to turn the attention towards thinking and know your thinking. For some people who are beginners in meditation, that's really hard to do. So if that's the case for you, if what we do this evening proves difficult, don't worry about it, because that tends to come over time, the ability to start being able to be mindful of thinking, to know you're thinking while you're thinking. And once we start knowing, we can know that we're thinking while we're thinking, then we're a little bit separated from it. We're not so glued to it or wedded to it, entangled with it. And then we can start looking at it more carefully and start seeing what this phenomenon is. And be curious about it, if curiosity helps you be quieter. Quiet, what is a thought? And so you can almost like ask yourself a question, what is this thinking if I don't use thinking to answer the question? If, you know, let the silence, the answer come in silence, really feel and sense the thinking. One of the things we can learn when we start noticing our thinking, we can notice the tremendous attraction to thinking, or the tremendous pull into the world of thought. They come with a lot of authority, they can come with a lot of insistence, they can come with a lot of authority, like this is important and you have to do this. They can come with a lot of emotions. Some trains of thought comes along with anxiety. Some trains of thought come along with desire. Some trains of thought come along with anger. Some thoughts come along with, you know, happiness. And it kind of comes along. And those emotions sometimes is what sometimes keeps us kind of wedded to it or caught in it. But in mindfulness meditation, the idea is to kind of have this kind of a silent awareness of it. And in that silent awareness of it, to begin to see much more clearly what's there, but and to learn how not to be leaning into it or caught by it. So with thinking, you don't have to push it away. You don't have to even let go of it. But you can turn and look at it. And in the turning to look at it or be mindful of it, over time, begin learning how to not be sucked up into it. To be just thinking. Generally, if people are, again, it takes time as you do this practice to really see this or experience this. Generally, as the mindfulness becomes stronger, the things we're thinking about begin to fade away pretty quickly. And the reason for that is that in order to, I distinguish between what's called thoughting and thinking. Thoughting is what the mind does. It produces a thought. Thinking is a train of associated thoughts. One thought stimulates another one, another idea, you know, we call it a train of thoughts. And but this thinking, this train of thoughts that go on, is fueled by our interest, fueled by our involvement with it, fueled by our getting engaged and trying to solve it or fix it or, you know, savor it or whatever it might be. And with clear mindfulness practice, really clear the recognition of it's there. That's kind of seeing it, but not feeding it. And if it's not being fed, then the fuel dissipates pretty quickly. And it's amazing, you know, sometimes when the meditation is strong, how quickly thoughts will just kind of dissolve by themselves. Some people get afraid of that because the only way that they know how to be alive is to be thinking. That's how they orient themselves. That's how they make meaning out of everything. And so it can be a little bit disorienting at times. But to be able to kind of just let the thoughts become quieter in the background, not center ourselves on thinking, not make them a problem, not give them priority, really allows for a deep peacefulness and a deep sense of well-being that is one of the nice fruits of meditation practice. So hopefully that makes some sense for you. Some people think in thoughts and words, like they're having a conversation, and it's almost like they're hearing themselves inside their head. And some people think more in images. Some people do a combination of both. And so when there's images in that, I also call that thinking. It's kind of, so both are possible. A little bit the kind of inner perception of how we're aware of it is a little bit different for some people between images and words. Some people in the words hear them, kind of with the inner ear or something, and some people with images see them with the inner eye, kind of. And occasionally there are people who see them as like reading a book. They see the words, kind of. So it's kind of a little bit of a combination of both, maybe, or something. So I'm going to do a guided meditation for you that's going to do a little bit of getting settled in, and then a simple directing your attention to notice your thinking. At first, though, the instructions will be to let go of your thoughts. And it's always a good instruction at the beginning of meditation. And if it's easy to let go of thoughts, it's generally a good thing to do in meditation. But at some point, I'm going to switch it to where you're allowed to think. And then I'll guide you in that with some of the practice of mindfulness of thinking. So give yourself a nice meditation posture. And as usual, it might be nice to sit a little bit straighter if you can, if that's appropriate for you. And gently close your eyes. As is often the case in the beginning of a meditation, you might take some long, slow, deep breaths. Breathing in deeply, feeling the rib cage expand, maybe even your shoulders rise up. And then a little bit longer exhale as you kind of relax and settle into your body. And then let your breathing return to normal. And take a few moments to scan through your body to see if there's any obvious, easy places that you can relax. Perhaps starting around your eyes and forehead. And as you exhale, soften in your eyes. Perhaps softening the jaws. Maybe as you exhale, softening the shoulders, releasing the shoulders to the pull of gravity. And softening your belly. And then becoming aware of your body breathing. Maybe with a physical awareness, a sensing of the sensations of the body that come into play as you breathe. The sensing of sensations in and of itself does not need thinking. You might let go of your thoughts, let them become quiet, even if it's for a few moments, so you can better feel the silent sensing of sensations of your body as you breathe. Maybe on your exhale, letting go of thoughts that come back. Maybe at the end of the exhale, there could be more of a silent awareness of breathing. Gently, maybe even lovingly, letting your thinking mind know that it doesn't need you, doesn't need to keep thinking for you so much. It's okay. Take a break and be quiet. Just help you to feel and sense the present moment with your breathing. And now for the second half of the meditation, you can let go, stop letting go of your thoughts. You can think. You don't have to think, but if thinking is happening, allow yourself to think. But see if you can bring a silent awareness, maybe even a silent curiosity, to the experience of thinking. Kind of like you're looking, thinking right in the eye and you're saying, I see you. As you're when you notice you're thinking, do you think more in words or more in pictures? Both are, either one is fine. How is it for you? As you observe your thinking, does it feel like there's a lot of energy in thinking? Or is it very kind of quiet and calm thinking? Is thinking fast and continuous, or is it slow and intermittent with gaps? Without thinking too much, is it pretty obvious what kind of thinking you're doing? Is it mostly remembering or planning or analyzing or fantasizing? Having a conversation? And if it's obvious, maybe you say quietly to yourself the word that represents what kind of thinking it is, just as a way of clearly acknowledging, clear recognition, thinking, planning, remembering, whatever it is. And if your thinking is insistent or strong in any way, is there any emotion or mood associated with your thinking? If you think with an inner voice, what's the tone of that voice? Gentle or harsh? If you think in pictures, what's the mood that comes along with the pictures? And if you're able to notice the mood or the emotion that's connected to your thinking, be very simple with it. No need to analyze or think about it. Be aware of it. Recognize it, kind of with a silent mind. And finally, as you notice yourself thinking, is there any location in your body where that thinking feels like it's happening? Or is there any activation of any part of the body that's associated with thinking? Where it's energized or tense or it's feeling a pressure? Any physical corollary or connection to your thinking? And if there is a location in your body associated with thinking, as you exhale, see if you can relax that part. See if you can soften the part of your body associated with thinking. Couple of minutes of the sitting, come back to your breathing, letting your awareness settle on how the body experiences breathing, perhaps letting go of your thoughts and every exhale, so you can better just be with the experience of breathing. And then to end the sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths again. It's good to take your time coming out of meditation. Feeling your body. Against the chair or the floor. And then when you feel ready, you can open your eyes. So there are some meditation, forms of meditation that often are called concentration meditations. Like, for example, there can be meditation practices that only concentrate on breathing. And in those meditations, they often talk about thinking as being a distraction because it takes you away from the breathing. And that can work for some people. But in the mindfulness practice, the idea is not to have anything be a distraction, really, but whatever is the predominant or compelling experience of the moment, that becomes a subject of attention, a non-reactive meditative awareness that's not thinking about it a lot or analyzing it a lot or making a big deal about it, but just there present for it, learning how to stay in the present moment with the experience. And we can do that with thinking. So rather than treating thinking as a distraction, if thinking is really strong, we turn towards it and know it. Now, if thinking is in the background as you meditate, you can just leave it in the background. It's not bothering you, you're not bothering it, just kind of a little bit going on in the background. And if the foreground of attention, you can stay with the breathing, just stay with the breathing. Just, you know, don't bother with the thoughts. If thoughts come into the foreground, then you're really kind of involved with them. And they're relatively light and not so compelling, or, you know, and it's easy to let go of. It's kind of nice to let go of them and or let them recede back into the background. So you can really stay with a higher quality awareness with the breathing or with the body or with whatever else is happening in the present moment. But sometimes these thoughts, thinking, is not so lightweight. It's, you know, it's really compelling. Sometimes they have us by the nose. You know, it's like you just robbed the local bank and you can't stop thinking. Because that's really, you know, just, you know, what's going to happen now? And so things happen to us and it's hard to put it down. Someone was angry with us and we can't put it down. Or whatever happens. And so that's a time when really, rather than treating it as a mistake or wrong to be thinking, and rather than just giving in to them and just going, okay, I'm going to go to town with this, you know, think whatever I want, and just really think better and plan better and have better fantasies, what we do is we turn towards it and we look at it directly with this kind of meditative awareness, this mindfulness awareness, non-reactive awareness, kind of a silent awareness. There might be some thoughts that tell you, oh, that's thinking or that's planning. That's fine, but the general tone is very quiet. Some people confuse thoughtfulness with mindfulness, that to be mindful is to think about what's happening. But mindfulness is actually much more quieter. It doesn't involve thinking so much about it. But so when we turn towards thinking, it's to be have this silent curiosity about it, silent awareness about it, to experience, to see it. And in doing so, you might recognize some things about it, planning, remembering, or something like that. But it is just kind of be there with it. But hopefully in doing that, to recognize the difference between just being attentive to it, watching it, and being lost in it. The example that was very meaningful for me many years ago, that I experienced in my life, beginning of my doing meditation, was there was kind of a party in the apartment I was living at. And the apartment had a balcony with sliding doors. And for some reason, I left to go onto the balcony and close the sliding doors. I couldn't hear all the ruckus inside and the talking and the excited talking and the movement. I could tell people were really animated. You know, their hands were up and swaying and they were leaning into each other. And it was clear that people were talking multiple times, hardly listening to each other. It was like a big thing. And I remember that before I went on the balcony, I was one of those people. I was lost in it and arguing and discussing and all that, what was going on. But when I went out in the balcony and closed the door, I couldn't hear anything. I could still see, and I thought, wow, they're really into it in there. And I could watch it without kind of being caught up in the content. And so this idea, that was really helpful for me because I applied that to my meditation. And I said, oh, there's like a ruckus party in there sometimes. And I'm kind of like one of the major partygoers or the major lawyers or the major, you know, newscasters or the major planners, you know, city planner for in there. And I'm one of those people. That's, you know, I'm really involved. But you know, I don't have to always be involved. It's possible to step back and look at it. And look at it a little bit with a quiet mind, a silent mind. Just, oh, there it is. And the value of doing that is that it begins to free us from some of the tremendous influence that our thinking can have on our life. We have judgments of ourselves, of other people. We have fears that we have angers. We have all kinds of things that come through or filtered through or processed through having thoughts. You can be walking down the street and you see a person that seems dangerous to you, and you feel really afraid of that person, all this danger and concern, and that's kind of relatively ordinary experience for many people, to be afraid of what's happened on the streets where they live in. And but you can also be walking down the street and you're so present, so watching what's going on in yourself, and you see that first you notice, oh, there's a person, there's seeing going on. That person looks like the high school bully that I knew. And here comes thoughts that this is a dangerous person. A thought, this is a dangerous person, comes up. And because it's so clear that a thought of a dangerous person has been born in your mind, and you say, it's just a thought, it's my thought. Is this really accurately portraying what's out there? I don't know. Let me take a second look. And you look. Actually, it doesn't look like my high school bully. They were just wearing red clothes like the bully wore. And so the projection of fear of a dangerous person, that's a dangerous person, doesn't happen. Because you watch the process in your mind arise. But if you don't watch it, if you're living a busy life and your mind is doing its thoughts and all that, it's happening so fast that we don't even notice that we have a thought, dangerous person. That's a thought, it's just a judgment or an idea. The thought, the person becomes dangerous for us. So this is how bias happens. This is how all kinds of difficulties happen in our life. But if we can be clear and mindful of the thought arise, we could question and say, is this really true? Is this really the lens through which accurate lens through which I see my life? And it can happen in all kinds of things. You know, it can happen with food. You know, food's my savior. And you see, you know, and before you know it, you're in the refrigerator pulling out the ice cream. But if you can watch the thought arise that, you know, that ice cream is going to make me feel content and happy and wonderful and something, so it's just a thought, then you might go, is that really true? I've already eaten a quart in the last half an hour. And so you say, oh, maybe not. But if you don't see the thought arise, it's like this is the truth somehow. It's a powerful thing to learn how to cultivate mindfulness of thinking. It gives us a lot more choice, a lot more wisdom about how to go through life in a useful way. So this training in mindfulness to be present for what is, when thinking becomes compelling, the idea is to turn towards our thoughts and be mindfulness of the thoughts. Generally, if they're not too compelling, if you really watch them with a silent mind, they tend to get quiet and go away by themselves. If after you've been mindful of them for a while, if you want to let go of them and they can be let go of, by all means. But when they're not easy to let go of, or they keep repeating over and over again, they really deserve, it's useful to bring more attention to what's going on there. What's happening here? And here's an interesting phenomenon to notice. And this is why we teach this mindfulness of thinking after emotions. Emotions, thinking which is quite compelling and strong and repetitive in nature, like you let go of it and it comes right back, most often is being fueled by some emotion. It's like the emotion is the soil in which it's growing out of. Or say it differently, I don't mean any disrespect for your thinking and your mind, but it's kind of like you're squeezing the toothpaste tube, and you wanted to stop this toothpaste from pouring out, so you keep wiping it off the top, you know, and it's just going to keep coming out, right? If you want to stop the toothpaste from coming out, you have to stop squeezing it. It's a little bit like that in our mind. You know, so please don't take it too personally. But, you know, our mind is a little bit like a toothpaste roll tube. And if we have this pressure or this emotional oomph that's behind our thinking, it's kind of like we're squeezing it and it's going to keep making more thoughts. So a classic example of this is planning. I don't know, 90% of planning that people have arises from anxiety. If you let go of the planning thoughts, the anxiety hasn't been touched. So it's there pumping out more planning thoughts. You can keep letting go, but it's really the planning thoughts are a symptom of a deeper cause, a deeper issue. So sometimes if thinking is really compelling and strong, you want to notice, is there any emotion associated with it? And that's when you can do emotion mindfulness. You can feel like that we talked about last week, because that's often what needs attention. Many times when there's a lot of strong thinking, the thinking is more like a symptom. I think of it as a flag that's going up and saying, "Hey, you, pay attention over here," but don't pay attention to the flag. There's something deeper that needs our attention, which is more often than not has to do with emotions. And unless we do that, it's very hard to let go of the emotions or stop being so entangled and involved with them. So when thinking is relatively light and we get caught in it, let go. When it's a little bit stronger, take a look at it. Maybe name it thinking, or name it planning or remembering or whatever it is. And if it goes away or is no longer compelling, then go back to your breathing. But when it's really compelling and strong, which it happens from time to time, or all the time, then there's a whole other realm of mindfulness to turn and look at it with this kind of silent curiosity, where you take some agency, some sense of your own, if you own power in a sense, you take it away from the thinking, because many of us give up our power into our thinking, believe it or not. Thinking is a whole phenomenon that takes over. But to take your kind of certain kind of power back or agency back by stepping back and looking at it. You're there, I'm here. And in a very relaxed, if you can, way, just see it. That's thinking. And if it keeps persisting, kind of look around. Is there any physical feelings connected to it, physical pressures or tensions? And then relax the tensions, relax the grip on the tube. If there are emotions connected to it, then do the emotion meditation. And not a few people discover that if they keep being troubled by a lot of thinking, but when they turn and notice the emotion that underlies it and do this mindfulness of emotions, the thinking quiets down very quickly. It's like the emotions are the thing that really needs our attention. It's not really the thinking. So I said a lot now. I don't know how that was to hear all that and how you understood it. But maybe I'd like to have maybe a couple of minutes here to hear from a few of you. What was it like to do that last meditation when I had you turn your attention to look at your thoughts as you were thinking? Anybody willing to say a little bit about it? Did any of you notice that when you were permission to look at thinking, that you stopped thinking? That happened to some of you? And before, you couldn't stop your thinking, but now you looked at it. Yes? You want to say something?
Yeah, I noticed when I think a lot of my thinking is reviewing, and I noticed that the slight curiosity that I brought... I sort of realized in the first time that when I was reviewing things, I was actually just sort of reliving them. And it was just like, it's happening again, it's happening again. I mean, just like daily things that, you know, that have happened, but that I was very emotionally involved in it. So I kind of was able to see that difference between reliving something and just noticing that I'm reviewing it. And it felt, there was just like a huge difference between those two
things. Which felt better to you?
Reviewing. Right. And then the other thing was planning. Yeah, but in the sense of kind of almost rehearsing or practicing, and I kind of realized that there's like an anxiety that's fueling that. So it's like almost the idea is like, oh, if I practice for every possible bad thing or rehearse for every possible bad thing that can happen, it'll somehow fix things. But it's actually just there's an underlying anxiety that's making me constantly create these scenarios.
And what do you think would happen to you if you brought the mindfulness to the anxiety?
I probably would stop. The toothpaste would probably stop coming out. Yeah.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Someone else, please. I think it's valuable to hear a little bit from all of you. Some of you are quiet, and you're welcome to be quiet, but it's nice to hear also. Do you?
So I noticed that at the beginning I was trying to pay attention to my thoughts, but I didn't have too many. I had more like moving lights, like shapes, which is not like my usual state. And so I was just observing that and thinking about how you were just talking before about how you can have image instead of like words. And I think at one point maybe I kind of got less attentive and I started drifting into thoughts. So I was able to, you know, observe them and do well. But I think maybe being tired kind of after a while, I drifted.
Great.
And I only realized it at the end. Like, oh, I've completely drifted. Yeah.
Great, thank you. Right in the.
I noticed that, like the lady was saying, the first time I think I noticed that my thoughts were clearly were images, and they were more like linked somehow related to emotions, Yeah, no, that was a nice discovery.
So it was a little bit of a surprise for you to see.
Yes,
that?
I actually didn't know because I knew that I was sure that I was thinking in words. So English is not my first language, and when I start actually thinking in English, it was like it was an obvious switch. So I knew that was that. Like, that was the images were like nice discovery. And then another thing that was like, I always think that I'm thinking behind my eyes. I mean, I can imagine another way to think. And when you ask us to pay attention to where the center of thought was, it went from my right eye, then in my mouth, and then eventually in my throat. And I know I have like a lot of feeling of pressure on my throat. And then I stayed there the whole time. I was thinking here. And then I slowly tried to relax. Didn't really go away, but it stayed there the whole time.
So if it relaxed a little bit?
A little bit, yes.
As it relaxed even a little bit, that changed something, the nature of your thinking?
I was more, a little bit more compassionate. Probably towards myself. Like,
nice.
It's there. I can't really do much, but you know, just taking care of myself.
Wonderful. Thank you. So I saw a hand over there in the back.
Oh, well, sort of similarly, I guess I just thought I'd add that the idea of the tone of voice of my inner monologue was interesting to try to monitor. Learning that, yes, I think in words more than pictures. But, yeah, it's something I'll have to give some more time with, what is the tone of voice of this inner monologue? Is it judgmental? Is it, you know, authoritative?
Some people can go for decades and not really notice what they're thinking, and then be shocked when they realize their tone of voice is just like that angry teacher they had in second grade. Somehow they internalized it, we can have a tone of anger or harshness or cynicism or kindness or compassion, all kinds of things that are unknown. But one of the reasons they're not known is, it's kind of like this. If I'm really concerned with having a glass of water, and the be-all and end-all of my life at this moment is a glass of water, I'm not really interested in how I'm holding that water. I'm just interested in the water. And so with thoughts, we're so interested in the content of the thoughts, the ideas in the thoughts, we don't notice how we're relating to it, what's going along with it, the emotions and all that. And as we begin to relax and settle down and open up the awareness and not be blinded by the content, the ideas of it, we see more the bigger picture of what's happening. And that's what you do when you notice the tone of voice. So that's, but many people don't notice the tone because they, you know, they're so interested or so involved in the content. So so sometimes when we give the instructions of mindfulness of thinking, the result is people just think more. So, in some point of view, the instructions I've given so far in these 4 weeks have gone really fast. And some of you might find that it's, now that you know it, you don't necessarily have to do everything. Some of you might find it back more useful just stay with week one, just mindfulness of breathing for longer and settle down and calm down. Or just breathing in the body. And then over the weeks that come, you might come eventually where it becomes obvious, oh, now it's time to do mindfulness of thinking. Or some of you might find that after tonight, this was the most important thing of the whole class so far. And this really helps things to settle down. What I like to teach and like to do also, I have something that I called the thinking muscle. And the thinking muscle is the pressure or tension or hyper energy buzz that sometimes I have in my forehead or different places in my head, in my jaw, sometimes in my mouth, sometimes in the neck. And then I relax that thinking muscle because of the toothpaste tube thing. And kind of that. But if I don't relax the thinking muscle, then there's this engine of thinking that just keeps going and going. It's an interesting world, this world of thinking. Don't be too interested in it, because that just makes more thinking. Do the basic meditation, but when it seems appropriate and it seems helpful, to really notice your thinking, and then you have a little bit of instructions now for how to do it. There is a handout, you know, with that has this instructions in form of this instructions in written form. So if maybe take it home and read it a few times, might be helpful. And I thought we would end this evening, we have about 10 minutes, with one more short meditation. And that it's a very different usage of thinking. It's actually a different meditation than mindfulness meditation, so don't associate the two, but they often complement each other. And so I'll teach it to you. But before I do, I just want to give you a chance. Do you have any questions about the instructions, anything that's not clear that you would like to ask? One of the consequences for me in doing meditation practice is I became friendly towards my thinking. That's a nice way of being with thoughts, to have be friendly towards them. Yes.
So most of the thinking. So you mentioned that we might get to this. Being aware of our thinking as we're thinking later in later stages of meditation. But what if we're just all getting lost in thinking? So basically what's happening is we're getting lost in thought, but then right after we recognize that we're lost in thought, we still remember what it was about. So whether it's about planning or work or remembering something. So should we take the time to just be curious about it, understand what it is, or should we just
No. The fact that you recognize what it is, like planning, that's enough. You might have say in your mind, I'm planning, and then go back to your thinking. But if you keep getting pulled into the world of thinking, keep getting lost in it over and over again, you can almost not, you know, and every time you try to be mindful of it, you get pulled into it over and over again, then you probably need a different strategy. And one of the options, if it's really like emergency, if you want to, you know, is count your breathing. Just go to your breathing and count it to 10. And if you really need that really big, you know, medicine, count to 10 and then count backwards to 1. But don't miss a count. And if you do that, what I do is I count the exhales. And I count the I pronounce each count the full length of the exhale. So go 1, 2, like that. And then I forget. What was it? What am I at? What number? If you forget, you start again at 1. And if you get to 32, because you were spaced out and you're an automatic pilot, you notice it, start at 1. Just whenever you can, just start at 1. And that can be, if you really have trouble with thinking, it just has the upper hand. Sometimes a technique like that can kind of calm things down and pull you away enough. And after you're more settled, then you can let go of the counting. Okay, let's do this little meditation. And you don't have to change your posture too much. We only have a few minutes. But, close your eyes. And part of the reason to take some deep breaths at the beginning of meditation and relax your body is to create a little shift inside so that we're shifting away from our normal thinking mode to a awareness mode, a mindfulness mode. So taking a few deep breaths and settling in. And letting your breathing breathe normal. And part of the background for this kind of meditation practice is a kind regard of yourself. We do the meditation practice because we care about ourselves. There's care, maybe even compassion for ourselves. Kindness. We're trying to do well to ourselves and improve our inner life. And not suffer so much, struggle so much. So as you're sitting here, can you find within you some tenderness towards yourself, some kindness or goodwill? Doesn't have to be strong. Just be. It's enough just to want to have goodwill, if that's what you can do. And then, in a very, very simple way, think thoughts that expresses the goodwill to yourself. Have thoughts of kindness about yourself. Thoughts of compassion. And in Buddhism, there's a meditation practice where we use these thoughts of goodwill to get focused and connected in a kind way. And a very simple way that this is done is to repeat the phrase, "May I be happy." And not like a mantra, but just really like you, almost like you mean it. Repeat that thought in a kind of rhythmic, calm, ongoing way. Just repeat it. May I be happy. Even though you're using a thought to say to yourself, may I be happy, let everything else around it be quiet. It's a quiet heart, a quiet mind that can receive the goodwill. May I be happy. In Buddhism, this practice of goodwill, thoughts of goodwill, is said to complement mindfulness practice. It does, brings an attitude to mindfulness practice of friendliness or kindness to our experience, to whatever is happening as we're mindful of it, to be mindful in a kind way. And if the mindfulness can't be kind, then maybe be kind to that unkindness. So take a deep breath or two to bring this to a close. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So that meditation on goodwill is often in English called loving-kindness meditation. And it's one of the really important meditations in our Buddhist tradition. And I wanted to offer you today for two reasons. One is that Buddhism is not only about letting go of our thoughts, but it's also learning to have helpful thoughts. And thoughts of kindness, of friendship, of compassion are often helpful. And the other is that sometimes only with creating an atmosphere of goodwill or kindness or friendliness can the mind really start becoming quiet, some of the anxiety quiet down. So sometimes when there's a lot of thinking going on, sometimes that's other form of, that's another different kind of medicine besides counting the breath, is to kind of stop the regular mindfulness and just a little bit talk to yourself in a kind way. And in Buddhism, usually we say, have those thoughts be really so simple that they're the same thought you repeat over and over again, so you're not thinking about it or analyzing. And there's a whole kind of practice in Buddhism of loving kindness that's a little bit more involved than what I taught you here, but just for now, I'll just give you the idea and how to do it. And certainly, this whole enterprise of this mindfulness, Buddhism and all that, is meant to be an enterprise or an approach or a way of living where we're really cultivating a lot of respect for ourselves, a lot of goodwill and compassion for ourselves. We count, we're important, and we want to really kind of bring forth the best in us which is what part of the purpose of mindfulness is, to really, even though it sounds like, you know, not much is happening, just be silently aware. Gee. But it's really that doorway that opens up to some well-being in ourselves. So we have one more week next week, and so I'll talk a little bit next week about the wisdom side of all this and some of the larger purposes of the mindfulness practice. And a hugely important part of this mindfulness practice is using it outside of meditation, learning how to be mindful in daily life. And some people find that's the place it really comes alive for them, when they start being mindful in daily life. Other people find that the mindfulness practice really comes alive when they start doing more meditation. And there's ways in which we do, like, retreats and things that we do that are meditating all day and things like that. So I'll talk about some of these range of things next time and do a review of what we've done so far. So thank you, and may you have pleasant thoughts.